You're listening to Read Between the Letting with Aaron Heath
and Matt McInerney. It's January 18th, 2010. Today on the show we have Scott Thomas, design director of the Obama campaign. We'll be talking to him about his role in the campaign and his upcoming book, Designing Obama.
We're going to touch on politics and design and the idea of branding ideas. We also geek out a bit over Type and the rumored Apple tablet. Stay tuned.
Welcome to the program. We're here with Scott Thomas. You know him as the design director for the Obama campaign. He's also a member of the Post family, and he's currently working on a book called Designing Obama. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Hi, guys.
Thanks so much for coming on. It's really a big honor, and I think this is going to be a really great show because we're going to be touching on some aspects of design that we might not usually be able to, and it's definitely going to be somewhat culturally based, too.
Great.
So could you start us off by giving a little bit about your background and how you got into design?
Sure. I actually started studying architecture, which I think every single day I kind of debate whether I want to go back into. Not because I dislike graphic design, but it's just kind of always where my heart has been and the way that my mind thinks. So beginning in architecture, I started seeing this other world of graphic design, and I was a little curious whether architecture was the route that I wanted to go down, just considering it was a 5-year program, and if anybody that has studied architecture, they might know that it's kind of a long, drawn-out process, and you spend a lot of time at the studio, many sleepless nights. So I was debating whether that was the right career choice for me. As well as just kind of hearing from professionals that, you know, oh, there's not a lot of money in architecture, and, you know, almost everybody in architecture kind of points in the opposite direction. So I kind of started going down more of a graphic design path and found myself missing math problems to a certain degree, and really fell into web design and web programming. And started learning how to market my own pages and, you know, taking the designs that I could do in Photoshop or Illustrator and actually implementing them into web design. So I got into that really early on. I think it was like 1998, the first .com boom when everybody, you know, needed somebody to design them a website. So I started doing that stuff, and one after another kind of built up my portfolio and moved to Chicago and found myself a few years later designing the BarackObama.com and VoteForChange.com, as well as some of the other microsites that the campaign produced.
Wow. So how did that come about? How did you just get a call one day, or how did it go?
It was an email, actually. I received an email from Michael Slaby, who was the then deputy director of New Media. And essentially he was at his wit's end with design stuff, and he was the only guy on the campaign that knew Photoshop and Illustrator, and as well as web programming. So he was kind of doing the whole like kit and caboodle early on in the campaign. Wow. And realized there was no way that he could do it. So he hired two other people, myself and John Slavik. He became the art director, and I was the design director, which I don't think either of us really knew what the difference between the two were. It was an email one day, and we kind of both started the same day. This was in September of 2007, about 3 months before Barack had even won the state of Iowa in the primaries.
So getting an email, that must have been pretty big and kind of shocking. Were you wondering at that time, like, how did they find me? You know, and then an email form, too.
I know. They found me on Creative Hotlist. Props to Communication Arts, I guess, for getting me the gig. But I think I was also one of the very few people on Communication Arts that had everything from PHP to MySQL to HTML to Illustrator and Photoshop kind of all listed in my skill set. So, there are very few types of designers right out there that have that wide range of skills. So I think that was, and I think I replied to the email faster than anybody else. I think that was really why I got the job.
Wow. So what level were you involved in then? You know, you were involved pretty early on. Just for our listeners, if you like kind of give a little recap, you know, of history, what level were you involved in with the overall aesthetic of the Obama campaign, aside from the websites?
Well, pretty much, I mean, John and I were involved with absolutely everything that required someone with design abilities to do. We were brought on the campaign within the new media department. New media was focused on creating a website, but it was very clear to Slaby that these other departments had needs. The advance team, which organized all of the events, needed signs and banners, and obviously for fundraising purposes, we need to create merchandise. So there was a lot of
overlap. Yeah.
And so we didn't have a design team really to begin with. It was just John and myself. And so we basically cranked out as much as we could with a couple volunteers that came in to help us out. And we really just did everything that we could to facilitate anyone. And so we designed anything that you would see in front of the senator or behind the senator during events, designed most of the posters. And between John and I, we just basically sent Photoshop files back and forth to one another for a long time, trying to get the site redesign done. And I think the process of redesigning the site, everything else started to gel together, and we started making other decisions, such as like which typeface to use. And Gotham became the big winner, and now is ubiquitous within the arena. So I mean, I think that we kind of had our hands in just about everything when it came to the overall aesthetic of the Obama visual language.
How about the mark?
The logo mark was already designed. That was the one thing that that was there. In my book, I kind of walked through the process. It actually has a lot of Saul Sender, who designed the logo, his process. And so you get to see like his sketches, as well as many of the various marks that, and kind of the evolution of the mark. Once we received that, when we started, they were using Perpetua and Gil Sands as the two typefaces, both designed by Eric Gill. And we quickly wanted to rid ourselves of English typography, offense to Matthew Carter and all of the great typographers in England, but we wanted to quickly move into a very American typeface. And we felt that what Heffler had to offer made a lot of sense.
Wow. It sounds like it must have been an incredible amount of work when you got there. I mean, were you just up constantly working 24/7 to get this done?
Basically, yeah. Yeah, we lived off of 5-hour energy drinks, Red Bull and pop.
Was there this? You kind of spoke about it earlier, but you said that the website really kind of brought everything together. So was there this sense of urgency when you first got there that you kind of had to develop this overall aesthetic? Like, was that your focus immediate from the get go, or were you just getting the materials out there that you needed at the time and then hoped that it would eventually come together?
I think it was a bit of both. You know, I remember the day before I started the campaign, I wrote in a journal, you know, something along the lines of, I want to introduce like true commercial branding into a presidential campaign. And what I was meaning by that, not saying I wanted to make Barack Obama a product, but I wanted to use the same elements of consistency and good design in order to communicate this kind of stability and experience. And I thought that if we could do that and we could do it well, we'd end up winning the presidential election. I think we won for a lot of other reasons, but I do feel like it was really the first time in modern political history that we've seen such a consistent and thorough, you know, designed candidate.
I'm kind of interested to know about the idea of branding for a person instead of branding for a whole company, and how you chose the language you used, especially emphasis on we as opposed to I, even though it's about an individual person. Can you go into that a bit?
Sure. So I think one of the things that's crucially important to our organization, and one of the things that, you know, I use the word brand, but I'm doing the like air quotes with my fingers right now, because I don't think, you know, I do think that the Obama brand, when you put the word Obama in front of it, the thing that you think of is the person. But I think in hindsight, the truth is that the Obama brand was all of the American people. And it evolved by the grassroots movement that came from the bottom up, not from, you know, Barack down. I think that there was a large amount of energy to take our country in a dramatically different direction. And the passion and the hope that, that everyone had in our country really transpired what is what would be considered the phenomenon. It wasn't really about the typeface or the website. I mean, those maybe contributed, you know, obviously to a certain degree, and it turned a lot of people's heads. But I think it was more the motivation and the passion to have an individual that would finally, that would be leading us, that maybe a lot of us agreed with. And the fact that he had written his thoughts and ideas down and kind of meditated his goals and missions to the American people in such an eloquent way is what really that brand was all about.
You know, it's kind of, it's as if you were branding the ideas, especially more specifically, change. It's as if you were giving an aesthetic to what would change look like. And, you know, it's interesting because not only was it this kind of symbolic idea of hope and change in politics, but also it's just a vast change, like you said, from what we've seen in political past design-wise. And I think that I think that anyone would agree that there was this cohesiveness that was unseen before, especially in anyone else's campaign this past election, but also in any time before it. Do you now that you're kind of in this arena, you know, have you been in talks with anyone? Obviously, I know you can't talk about things, but do you feel that there is going to be this major change in the way we look at politics from now on from a design standpoint?
Well, definitely. I mean, I think that we were maybe for the first time in a long time. I mean, we know that political campaigns of the past had traditionally used advertising agencies to facilitate their needs. And by having a new media team, the web team actually embedded within the Obama campaign, and that team understanding that they needed a design team, we were kind of the first maybe design team that were that was actually embedded within an organization. But I think the thing that we lacked was the knowledge from senior strategists to understand the level of strategy that design brings. And that the visuals, the way that visuals actually communicate, it's important, you know, to them to get the wording right and to understand that the message of the day is and the talking points are all ironed out. But one of the things that they rarely have considered, as you know, political consultants up and down the board, is the level of importance that visuals and design play on communicating that same message. And I think we were maybe one of the first organizations to do that. And I think all political organizations in the future will definitely need to fill that role, right, and make a designer a bit more of a strategist rather than just a you know, visual designer that's cranking right out on Photoshop or Illustrator.
One of the pieces of the strategy I found really interesting, and it must have been a difficult line to dance, was the balance between authenticity and making everything look consistent, but also working with artists that may not have been a part of the campaign at all, or even just movements of people that want to design their own material, but obviously you couldn't fulfill every need. How did you go about that?
Well, I mean, one of the main missions was to have everyone participate in the selection. Every single part of our campaign strategy was, we knew that this campaign would be nothing without people being involved in it. So whether you were an illustrator and we wanted to approach you to design a poster, or whether, you know, we wanted you to design us a t-shirt for the campaign internally, it was really about bringing the message out there, like, take this out, you know, do this yourself. What can you do? Here's all the elements, use them and make things for yourself. And we saw that kind of bubble up into a lot of people making things. And I think with, you know, the help of some very well-known designers such as Shepard Fairey and Scott Hansen, and a lot of the posters that we did for Artists for Obama, Lance Wyman, Guy Borchette, all those guys, they contributed by submitting a poster that, you know, was actually serving a fundraising purpose. But I think it did a lot more than that. It basically communicated to all the people that looked up to them, you know, oh, I should do that too, because I support this guy. And it was maybe it was maybe the first time I've seen in my lifetime where the art community, which is typically very disenfranchised from politics in general, actually began changing their messaging and the work that they were creating. They're typically so anti-politics, and they're typically very pessimistic people. They were also grabbing on to the hope and change message and communicating that to a lot of people.
Was Artists for Obama something that you started or the campaign started, or did it come out of artists already doing this?
Well, it kind of came out a little bit of both. Shepard Fairey's progress poster, which he was before the Hope poster, was just his limited edition silkscreen poster. And right after I saw that, I contacted, John and myself. We were like, oh, this is great. You know, we should get him involved and do an illustration for us. And so that kind of began this Artist for Obama series. And we just decided, let's do a poster series and ask every single designer we know to make stuff. And so we sent out basically emails to all of our heroes and just designers that we liked and people we wanted to work with and asked them to, submit a poster. And I would say that we could take about 50% of them. There are about 50% of them that we could sell up the ladder and 50% that, we had that'll actually be in the book, but that we just had to, say no to, that there was no way we could do it.
Wow.
Talking about strategy a little bit, so could you go into the process a little more about things? For example, with the website and everything, obviously, who essentially had the final say on things? What was the grouping like between you as a designer and then the strategy aspect of it, for whether it be the website or the banner or things like that? Who kind of saw the final thing, and were there a lot of changes to wording here and wording there, could you go into that a little bit more?
Well, I think if you asked me during the campaign, I would say, yeah, there were a lot of changes that had to be made. But we had to learn how to be scrappy and be, kind of on our tiptoes the entire time. But the truth is that, especially for the website, because we were the new media department, we could kind of run amok to a certain degree. And so a lot of the things that we put on the web, it was the final approval was Joe Rosebars, who is the director of new media. He was kind of the design department's direct superior. And then above that was David Plouffe, who was the campaign manager, who, if we were making major changes to the site or site design, we would show that to him. And he would typically say, good, go roll with it. Or he'd say
nice.
let's tone down the glow. So, I mean, there wasn't a huge chain of command. And I think overall, one of the things that was very different about our organization in comparison to most organizations is there was no time for that revision and keep reinventing the wheel over and over again. There definitely were times where we had to, where I think we did, 25 versions of some brochure or something, which was a total headache. But beyond that, we tried to keep the amount of revisions very, very low, and because we just didn't have time to fuss with it. And most departments didn't have time to fuss with it either. So it was maybe two rounds of revisions, change this text here, change this text there, and let's go. We got to go now.
Yeah.
And I think speed was always the main thing, is that it was definitely a now kind of environment. And so that long, drawn-out process of – and that, and when you get into other organizations, people are out for different purposes. And so you kind of have this person's goal, that this person wants to do this with it, and this person wants to do this with it. We all kind of had the same goal, which was to get Barack Obama elected president. So beyond that, it was, it didn't matter, basically. It was kind of like, we all have the same mission here. We're all trying to do the same thing. Let's just get this out there.
Did you have to learn to be more of an intuitive designer as you had to design things so quickly and essentially just go, go, go?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think it was a matter of kind of like going with our gut on certain things. It was a matter of understanding what's a 10-minute project and what's a 10-hour project. Everyone thought a lot of people thought that our stuff was all, great and super consistent. And I'm sure that it's only myself and a couple other people that can look back on it and be like, man, that podium sign looked horrible. and that banner just didn't work nearly as well. I'm glad we only used it once. And those types of things just happen. We saw inconsistencies in color and we tried figuring out ways to perfect that. So, I mean, we were having to just push things out there. And I think that was the other thing that I really learned in the process of the campaign is that at a certain point, you know, you have to hit print, you have to go, and you can only sit on it for so long until it has to go out the door. And the book is a totally different process, because the book that I'm working on now, it's just the opposite, where I'm trying to create this historical document of all the work that we created inside the campaign as well as outside of the campaign, and trying to chronicle it the best that I possibly can. And so it's a totally different process, where it's taking it really slowly and you know, rethinking almost every layout over and over and over again.
In the book, are you going to be touching on things that specific things you would have done differently now?
I mean, yes and no. I don't think so. I think it was much more like, here's what we did. The things that we would have done differently, that question always comes up, and I never have a good answer for it. But I know that
I think that's good.
But I know that there were plenty that we thought of as we were going through it. I mean, obviously, I think we would have we definitely wouldn't have used certain symbolism that raised major questions from the right. There were quite a few other things that I'm sure we would have done differently, but it's hard to say exactly what those things are, what those things would have been, because we were really moving too quickly. We were moving way too fast.
Yeah. Speaking of that kind of thing, did that shock you in a way? Obviously, we need to pay attention to symbolism in design, but did the level of scrutiny that came upon minor things shock you at any time in the campaign?
Well, yeah, yes and no. I mean, there was so much stuff that we were creating, and so much material that we were putting out there. And one of the nice things was that there was a kind of a comment thread. The speed of information is moving so quickly now that we could kind of have an entire design critique in 30 seconds after we posted something. You know, somebody would complain about this or this, that, you know, why did they use this button? What does that mean? And people started looking into it, I think, a little too deeply. But with the big debacle was the presidential seal. There was kind of a period where we used a faux presidential seal on a slow news Friday. And of course, you know, I think the media just didn't have anything better to talk about. So they decided to talk about this sign. It was even used by McCain as a talking point in the debate. So, you know, that kind of hurt a little bit. But beyond that, I mean, it really was one of those things where we didn't even think it was a good idea. There was another department that was really pushing for it to get used. And we just thought, you know, no, we think, you know, let's just do the logo. And they're like, no, let's make it the presidential seal. It'll look badass. And it hurt us in the end. But my ears didn't stop ringing for a couple of days. But no, you know, I think it's really hard to say what we would have done a better job of staying away from.
I'm kind of interested to know how you learned about connecting with people and kind of especially the experience with new media, like having to build a site so quickly and then having so many people interact with it. What did you learn about the dealing with that kind of user experience and especially with so many people in such a quick period of time?
Well, our hands were tied on many different levels when it came to the site. We were using multiple different CMS systems, kind of all connecting together. So technologically, it was a very difficult site to kind of work around and to make sure that everything looked consistent and seemed to work the same way. The other aspect was that we had content kind of growing as an organism. So people were kind of generating their own blogs and writing their own content, as well as constantly people within my department were just creating pages at an astronomical rate for, you know, each state and different events and different fundraising things. So I think what we really needed to do when we were building the site was understand that we have all these elements that we've created, and we need to reuse those elements as much as possible. And I think that maybe the design process sometimes is what actually hurts sites and usability, because every single page that you get a 3-week, you know, process on redesigning, you totally over-design it and redesign it and make it brand new. And as you're navigating through an entire larger site, nothing seems to be consistent. Whereas with us, we didn't have time to reinvent the wheel. We kind of had to use the same elements over and over again. So once we had a button, oftentimes we would just roll with it, and we'd use Photoshop to, you know, mess it up as much as we possibly could to make it work for our needs. Mm-hmm. And I think that was one of the things that really benefited the BarackObama.com site in terms of the Vote for Change site, which was the voter registration tool that we developed in the campaign, that was really a matter of saying, okay, look, we know that we need to basically create a start for this, and we have to understand that things are going to constantly change as we get more legal information and learn more about this process, because we were talking about a complex that's really, really complex and very complicated. And so we knew we were going to start discovering more things, and I think it was about kind of making a very flexible system. I think with almost all websites, it's a matter of creating a flexible system and just figuring out how they can kind of work a little bit better.
Nice. Going off that a little bit, can you think of something? What do you think the most important or valuable thing you learned from this was as a citizen, and then also maybe as a designer?
Good question. That's a really good question. I think that first and foremost, I'd say as a citizen, one of the things that it really taught me was the importance of every voice, and the power that every voice has, and the potential of what we can do individually and collectively. And there's a huge opportunity for all of us as individuals to make a large leap. And I think one of the things that we really have to stop doing is relying on our government to make changes and really begin to make the change for ourselves. And that comes on almost every single level. And I think a lot of people feel paralyzed by the system oftentimes. And we need to kind of change those perspectives and those minds and understand that the world is our oyster. And we have technology and we have the ability to connect with so many people that think about the same things and care about the same things. Like if you want to make some silly product or talk about some silly topic, you can probably figure out an audience that's interested in that product, or you can find somebody that's interested in discussing those topics. And that idea of how technology is changing the world is, I think, really what is causing our economy to be in such a tizzy. It's because we're actually changing the way we live and work. As a large organism, we are, in fact, evolving. And old school business is wondering how they get on the bandwagon. And I hate to say it, but, it's hard for them. Like, I'm not following Kentucky Fried Chicken on Twitter because I choose not to, And I think that's happening with with almost all lines of business. And I think that's what I'm learning maybe collectively about government and something that in government and society as a whole that really interests me is how our technology is really changing the way that we live and we communicate. I mean, I think without the way technology was working in this election, I've kind of viewed technology as this like Olympic or this kind of political elections are like this Olympics of technology, right? Like every 4 years you get to bring all your best tools out. And 4 years before there really wasn't YouTube and streaming video and the effect that we have today. Online donations were definitely happening in the Dean campaign. Blogs weren't nearly as relevant. Twitter didn't even exist. The power of Facebook wasn't a potential 4 years ago. And within 4 years, we evolved so quickly and connected in such brand new ways that if something happened in the campaign, instantly hundreds of thousands of people knew about it on Twitter.
Good or bad.
Good or bad, right. And the truth, there's a large truth to the fact that politicians don't have the ability to lie anymore. The people that are on the top are actually elected officials that we put there to represent us. And if they don't want to listen to us, and if they don't want to hear what we have to say, they're not going to get voted into office next time around. And the next time that they can lie and hide and just hold their cushy job, it's not going to happen. We're going to kind of rage against that, and we're going to start putting tweets up so everybody in the world knows about it. And I think that we saw that with this election, that there's no room for lying. There's no room for politicians to say things that they don't mean.
Very nice. How do you feel about the fact that you had a big part in kind of making Gotham almost a new Helvetica for corporations?
Oh man, that hurts.
That's not a bad thing.
I know. But it is a good thing. I think, you know, it's a wonderful face to use. You can use it for just about any purpose. There's kind of every single weight known to man. It's flexible, and that's everything that a designer looks for in a typeface. I don't think it's the only typeface out there. I don't think that it's necessarily going to be the new Helvetica, because I think Helvetica is a beautiful face. In fact, for my personal stuff, I use Helvetica as much as possible. I don't think there's a way to improve Helvetica. Helvetica is kind of the face, but for our purposes, it made sense. It was very American, and it looks very American.
The American Helvetica, then.
It is kind of amazing that that's really what it's becoming. It's becoming the new face of American type.
Well, right. And I mean, and you have to think Helvetica did that a long time ago from, you know, if you look at American Airlines or you look at NASA, yeah, like everything was Helvetica.
It's the 21st century Helvetica.
Right. And probably in about 20 or 30 years, or because we're moving much faster, maybe in 2 or 3 years, we're going to think that Gotham is the authority and we're going to have to create a new geometric Sans Serif.
Absolutely.
there you go, type designers. That's your challenge.
Okay. So let's talk about designing Obama, and let's start with the way that you kind of took the model of the Obama campaign of using of everybody has a voice and everyone can donate, and you put it up on Kickstarter, and you ended up raising what is it, close to $60,000 or $80,000?
Yeah, we raised $84,000 in about 4 weeks. And that was, you know, it was miraculous to kind of all of us that were involved. But Kickstarter kind of fell into our laps. We last year at this time, actually, when I went to DC for the inauguration, I met with a publisher there from New York, and we began talking about the possibility of creating this book. And of course, I was really excited about the opportunity, and went through about, I think, one or two months of trying to get the agreement worked out. I went to New York and had a meeting with them, and basically I realized that, you know, them and most of the way the publishing industry works is that the publishing industry, a lot like the music industry, will help you create your book. They'll help you facilitate, creating something, but it's not necessarily going to be what you envision. Mm-hmm. You don't have control over the title. You're not going to have control over the cover. And in fact, you might not have control over the type of paper or materials that you're going to use. I'm unfortunately a designer. And as you guys probably know, you want to pick like all those things. Yeah. You want every detail to be your vision. And it was something that I decided I wanted to stick true to. And if I was going to do it, I wasn't going to just like create a mainstream book that sold in every single Barnes and Nobles and Borders and sold for $19.99, because I go into those stores and I'm not excited about any of those books. Like none of those books excite me, or do I pick up and want to own, because I just feel like they look like all of the other books. And it's because they do, because they're very cost effective to make. And, and the publishing industry has obviously had to figure out ways to be profitable. And with my book, I decided that I wanted to really, especially with this Designing Obama book, it needed to look a certain way, and it needed to act and function a certain way, and it really needed to convey what the campaign conveyed. And so in order to do that, I decided to go out on my own, and Kickstarter felt, like I said, fell into our laps kind of. And so we posted our project with the help of the Kickstarter guys. It was actually, you know, they were in beta at the time, so we were just talking to them about whether they were ready for us and how much money should we raise, and we just kind of talked about all that stuff. And when we launched the project, we just instantly saw, you know, a massive amount of support for the concept of funding your own creative projects in a brand new way.
It's definitely a really exciting way of going about it, and I'm really excited to see what the final product is. Can you talk to us a bit about how you're designing, what the choices you're making are, and then also what's in the book?
Yeah. Wow. Well, right now I wish we were doing like a video chat, because you would see, around me literally stacks of like dummies, stacks of like swatch books for all of the different substrates, paper materials that we're using in the book.
You're just going all out.
Going all out, basically, yeah. Awesome. Buying paper that's way too expensive, basically. the book cloth right now is being, it's probably on a boat somewhere between Japan and the United States. The book's being printed and bound in the United States. It's essentially going to have a sleeve that wraps around the book, especially for this first run. It's going to look really nice. The sleeve has a multi-level embossing and debossing, so we needed to hand carve a brass die, which is in process right now. The book cloth, like I said, is being shipped from Japan. It has a bit of foil. There's a die-cut circle on the sleeve, which shows the Obama logo that's foiled on the cover.
Very nice.
So basically, the blue cloth book, the only thing on the front cover of this book is an Obama logo, which if you talk to any publishing company and say there's no title on the front cover of the book, they'd be like,
it's like a process book, really.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's a process book. It's an art and design book. It's not a, it's not intended for any other purpose. On the inside, there's a beautiful kind of silver, Cordenons. I'm probably totally mispronouncing that paper company's name, but a really nice interior paper holding the book together. And inside, it's a 6-color book. So we're using some really nice metallic spot colors and a 4-color CMYK process. But it's going to be a fancy. It's going to be a fancy book. It's about 9.1 inches by 11 inches. So it has a really good weight. It's right now I think we're at like, it's going to be closer to like 330 pages than 360 pages. And we're in the process now. Like I just got all the color corrected images. Sorry, there's a saw going on in the background.
That's right.
But yeah, we just got all the color corrected images and we're ready. We're basically ready to put this book together.
So a few questions. This might be on the website, but how many are you hoping to print for the first run? And about what's the price? And then also, were there any legal issues you had to get through with, you know, the actual Obama campaign and Obama himself, you know, to use these materials and talk about the process?
Actually, yes and no. To your first question, we're doing a very small run initially. And that small run is just because we don't have a lot of money. We raised $84,000, and the second that you see, you know, the print bill, you'll understand why we can't do a very large run. But the idea is really just to get the book out there and into people's hands with the idea that we'll go back and do a large second run. Mm. So that was really the theory, because we know that this book is going to sell well once it gets into the hands of people, right? So
yeah, I was asking because I want a copy, so
yeah. And so right now, if you go to designingobama.com, there's a pre-order page, and the book was going for like $50, $75 and $100 were like the increments for the book on Kickstarter. But like the people that bought in at $50, that level, that's pretty much the like per unit cost of each book.
Oh, really?
So, I mean, they got like a really good deal. And so we had to raise the price to $69.99. And I know that there was like some questions that I saw about that on Twitter and stuff. Like, why'd you raise the price of the book? And why is it $70 now? And it's only because like, you know, you put all of your blood, sweat, and tears into something, you kind of hope to get paid for it in the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we've been just kind of working to figure out how we can do that. But you can still pre-order the book online at designingobama.com. So that's that. In terms of the legal stuff, all of the artwork was submitted by the artists themselves. So we basically have kind of we have a legalese website form that people just could kind of go and upload their images. So most of the images have been cleared. The stuff in the book from the campaign is stuff that's kind of been public. So there wasn't a whole lot. And honestly, this book is kind of like of a smaller genre. We're not wanting it to be in every Barnes & Noble and Borders and those kind of sites, as I was saying. So it's I think kind of for designers' eyes right now, and I think that's the way it should be. So there's nothing kind of like super top secret in it. Mm. It's a lot of artwork. I'd say about one third of the book is about our process and some of the stuff that you know we made public to them to everyone. Soul Sender put his logo process in there. There's a little section about the typography and kind of the what our style guide looked like and why we made the decisions that we did typographically, as well as going into the web design process a little. So, you know, there are some things that weren't fully public that are interesting to show. You know, what was the web design process like for the Obama campaign, and how many files did you guys have going back and forth? And as well as you can see every single feature graphic from the website kind of drawn out in two spreads. So the history of almost the entire campaign is boiled down into two pages. So that's kind of, I mean, the last two thirds of the book I'd say is all, Artists for Obama stuff. It's like all the posters that were created for Vote for Change, Artists for Obama, and, just stuff that the grassroots did that, some of that stuff amazes me. There's a guy that, did an Etch-a-Sketch of Barack, and he did it in a video form, so you can literally watch him draw it. And that was fun to figure out how I'm going to put in a book. there's some street art that was created to some stuff that I think will be the images that will be in the National Portrait Gallery someday. That is kind of the emblematic vision that we see of Barack Obama.
Wow, sounds really exciting. Yeah, I'm really glad I got in at the $50 level.
Yeah. Well, thanks for supporting me. I couldn't have done it without everyone.
No problem. I'm really excited about it. So one thing I wanted to ask you about is if you could explain what the Post family is, because I know that's involved in this, and I don't know if I know a ton about it. I just know it's a design collective, or
yeah, kind of. I mean, we use the word collective sparingly because we don't. When we all got together, we realized, you know, our community has always been kind of very closed off, and it was always difficult to kind of like integrate yourself. I don't know how many gallery openings we went to, and you kind of walk in and you might roam around and you don't say a word to anybody and then you leave. And that's it. You know, you maybe have a glass of wine and there's not a whole lot of, community there. And when we started the Post family, we kind of all had very similar ideas as to the stuff that we wanted to create. And in a way, we kind of went with the flow and we really wanted to get back to our hands. We wanted to, you know, you can hear the saw in the background.
Yeah.
We wanted to use wood type, and we wanted to play with the letterpress, and we wanted to silk screen, and all those things boiled into, let's get a studio together. We started with a very small studio and then moved into a larger studio downstairs, which also became a gallery. So in the front of our space, we have the family room, which is our gallery that we highlight oftentimes local Chicago artists, and kind of have a place that the community can come and hang out and talk. And we feel that our events are you know, very community centric. And that's why we really kind of view ourselves as a family of individuals. And our main goal is to just, you know, support one another and do the design stuff that we really want to do. We kind of all have our 9-to-5 jobs, so this is the family, you know, that we come home to.
Nice. Very cool. That's very cool. Extremely cool. I haven't really heard of anything like that before. So, but I think that that's kind of why Matt and I got into this to begin with because of that whole community thing. So, right. I think that's, you know, maybe people are forming communities differently, but I think there is this whole idea overall that people want more community.
Yeah, yeah. And you want like more people to kind of hang out with, talk with, share similar ideas.
Yeah.
And the Post family website, which is thepostfamily.com, is basically a blog and online store where we, you know, sell some of our goods that we create, and for the most part we kind of share what we think is cool. Just, you know, that simply, and hope that people kind of come to our events and hang out with us. And we knew that we would attract kind of like-minded individuals, and that seems to be happening more and more. And as each person kind of takes on their own personal projects, Chad Corey, who's actually here right now, just had a gallery show at Rodeo Fugi, was on Grain Edit last week. And it's just an awesome illustrator and collage artist. He's a part of the family, and so like he does really well, and something breaks for him, it kind of all goes back to the family. And similarly with the book, when we were launching that, a lot of people learned about the Post family through that. So I think more and more and more, the nice thing about our family is that it's kind of ever growing as each member grows up and becomes a person of society at large.
So is it financed from all of you as you guys get into your own little things?
Basically, yeah. I mean, we really just early on decided let's just split the cost of rent and get a space together, which allowed us to put equipment that we wanted or basically just a place to kind of make a little bit of a mess.
That's a really nice. Cool idea.
Yeah,
maybe we should try our own Post family, Aaron.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there, Matt, do you have any other questions?
Well, I'd kind of like to know what's next after designing Obama
absolutely.
For you.
Absolutely.
Now that
what are you
the
doing
campaign's
now?
Over, what are you doing?
Good question. I've taken on a couple of web projects that are, you know, I did a little bit with the White House and decided not to go to D.C., so I decided to stick around Chicago and kind of do work on both coasts. But I'm doing kind of not really web consulting, but web design and doing a little bit of consulting as well. And on top of that, just trying to figure out, you know, what is the next major project for myself? And, you know, everybody kind of has those larger questions. I'm actually on Wednesday speaking at the Mies van der Rohe Society Crown Hall here in Chicago on the IIT campus.
Oh, cool.
About how architecture has influenced my process. And I think that one of the interesting things that I'm learning about myself is the more that I research architecture, the more that I'm intrigued by it. So I don't know, there might be this, there might be this little opportunity or this little option to continue architecture school. So I might go back to architecture school for a while.
Very nice.
That'd be cool.
Well, good luck with, you know, all of your endeavors, obviously. I want to say that the Obama sites that you did, they were absolutely beautiful.
I have to say first, like, finally, that really, you know, my team,
right.
It wasn't just me. So, like, everybody that was involved in that said they didn't like that or that we should change this or we should do that really made it that great. And because we were all working from our heart, that's what made that campaign look so good. We put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears in it. Myself, John, everyone, Matt Ipkar, Walker Hamilton, all those guys did such an amazing job. The people that I surrounded myself with and rubbed elbows with beyond myself is what really made this campaign work and tick. And I couldn't have done it without them.
Nice.
Very cool. Is there anything we forgot to ask you that you really wanted to talk about?
Well, I mean, I was really hoping to talk more about typography, but I think we covered that a little bit.
Okay. Well, we're huge type nerds here. If you want to say, I love type.
We'll jump right on the bandwagon. Why didn't you use a slab serif? No.
Well, I mean, I was going to say, you know, why couldn't we actually letterpress our posters? I was really hoping to do that with. Somebody contacted me from the state of Tennessee. There was a governor's race there. It was right after the Obama campaign. And I tell you, I shit you not, I was like, you guys should use Hatch Show Print to do all your posters. Wouldn't that be awesome? Like seeing a governor's race with all
really,
Hatch Show Print posters.
It really would be. Yeah, absolutely.
I'd vote for that guy.
Have you gotten a lot of other contact from other political campaigns after this?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of contact. I don't consider myself.
I think you need to do something for the Republican Party now, just so you have this equal design directive.
Sorry, not gonna happen. Maybe like when I'm old and stodgy and want to hold all my. No, sorry, I'm not gonna get too political rant. But no, I vote with my heart and I choose the projects that I'm really passionate about and. Yeah, there's never a doubt whether like I know that I want to work on something. I don't let money kind of judge what I do. And I think that's maybe an important takeaway to a lot of people that I hear kind of complaining about their jobs or like, oh man, I feel so soulless in this. And I think it's a matter of like take the things that you know, that you really know you love. And there's even been a few projects after the campaign that I decided to take, and a couple months in, I'm just like, man, this project is misery. Why? And I just realized, you know, that my heart isn't in it. And you have to really work on things that, you know, you believe in. And all of a sudden, the great work just happens.
Absolutely. Well, getting back into type, what do you say? What's your personal favorite typeface? Do you have one?
Oh, no, man. That's like asking a parent what their favorite child is.
It is hard, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Right now, I'm using a lot of Heffler text, the swash italic in the book.
It's so hard to get away from Heffler and Freer Jones. Like, you know, they just – they always produce just beautiful stuff.
No, they are. I mean, they're on top of it in the type community, I think, and they're so prolific in every typeface. You know, they released a typeface last week.
Vatisse.
I mean, I don't know what I get more excited about, when they release a new face or when Apple releases a new product. I mean, I don't know.
That's also coming up soon. You know, what we need is Apple to rebrand with a typeface from them.
Use Whitney instead of Myriad or something.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a great idea.
Sign a petition, maybe.
Yeah, you know, actually, I'm sure Jonathan Tobias would love that opportunity. Yeah.
Speaking of Apple, this kind of goes along with the whole art and design community. They released their new invitation today, and it's these graffiti splatters. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of talk that they're going to – it says, come see what we've created now, or come see our latest creation. And there's obviously, you know, a lot of rumors that it's a tablet. So I'm wondering what effect this whole, like, graffiti color splats and our latest creation might have to do with art or creating, you know. They have Aperture. I wonder if they're going to make a Photoshop competitor, or if there's going to be competing with Wacom.
Ooh. I've always been really excited about that, because one of the things that I absolutely despise about working on a computer is just having to deal with the mouse,
yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I want to move, like, away from, like, more than an arm's length away, or, like, actually get back to drawing. I mean, I draw in my sketchbook all the time, but there's nothing really like
right, even with Wacom tablets and Photoshop, there's still that you have to pick these specific settings. Like, even when you have pressure sensitivity on, there's still this distance between me and the screen.
I just got one of these Wacoms, and I had to set up a whole set of calligraphic brushes, and I was like, oh man, if I just had a brush though.
Yeah,
I know, right. Well, and it goes back to kind of, I don't know if you guys are both a little younger than I am, but did you ever draw on a drawing board?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, like, You know, drawing like a line was really easy, and then you'd get out like a compass, right? And that's how you would draw the circle, and you could draw multiple circles. And the way that you would, you know, build your image was by creating these layers, and then it was really easy through chiaroscuro to like make your lines your lines. Mm-hmm. And I don't know who invented the Pathfinder idea. I don't like that idea at all. It's so I don't know how many years I've been practicing this, maybe 10, but I still don't really understand how Pathfinder works. Sometimes I don't click on the right setting.
It works just well for type design, but it's really hard to do illustration with the Pathfinder.
So we'll see what happens.
Well, I remember about a year ago, I was talking to a friend that works for Apple, and I was like, do you think you could get me a team of engineers? Because I want to build something called Drawing Board, and I want it to work just like a drawing board. None of these Photoshop wasn't even made for what we use it for today. Like, it was made for photographic treatments and a dark room. And now I just want a drawing board. I want to be able to sit down at a machine with like my actual Micron and start drawing like right on the screen.
Maybe this will be your next project, to engineer the drawing board.
No, you know, well, I think all designers are kind of we're all kind of crazed with having too many ideas, you know?
Yeah.
So it's always hard to, like, figure out what, you know, what's the next thing I'm going to work on?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, anyway, I feel like I've been rambling, so I hope I didn't bore anyone.
No.
No, we really like it, yeah.
Good. Well, thanks for having me on, and best of luck to you guys.
Thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you for wrapping the show up for us. You did a good. We always kind of have to find that middle ground, and you're like, all right, guys, ready to go.
Oh yeah, I keep everything to an hour anymore. It's like, past that, I know that it's like it's going on too long. But hey, yeah, thanks a lot. I really appreciate what you guys are doing, and keep it up.
Yeah,
well, thanks. Absolutely. Thanks so much.
Scott Thomas.
Best wishes, guys.
All right, we want to thank again Scott Thomas so much for coming on. That was a great conversation.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that.
He's a great guy. Definitely check out The Post Family. Definitely go pick up a copy of that book. And it really does. Like, just the little Photoshop drawing on the website, it looks beautiful already.
Yeah, and I'm really stoked I got in at $50. I'll let you know how it looks.
You know, and speaking of Kickstarter, we got an email from someone about another Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah, we got an email about a guy named Lester who is starting a campaign to launch an art school in the Philippines where he can teach about art and design. And we really love supporting things like that. And, you know, if you're supporting the arts, we're your friend. So we thought we'd pass along the link and maybe another project on Kickstarter can get funded.
And, you know, the reason why, you know, we get a lot of emails here and there about different projects or different things that, you know, people ask if we can shout a word out to. And we really enjoy doing it, especially for projects like this, because this is specifically an art and design school in the Philippines for young adults who can't afford college. So this is just an example. His name is Lester Nelson, of a guy who is trying to get more involved with his community. And then Kickstarter, we haven't really talked about it before, but Kickstarter is essentially the kind of this grassroots website to where you can put up, you know, ask for donations, say this is your goal, and then multiple people can donate. And how does it work, Matt? If they don't reach that goal, then the money
nobody has to spend any money. All the money's returned. Or actually, you're not even charged. So it doesn't charge you until the project goes through. So the idea is, if it gets funded, then you have enough money to do what you want. Everybody gets charged. If it doesn't get funded, well, then you wouldn't have enough money to do it anyway, and nobody gets charged. No risk. You basically just put money towards things you want to see happen, and if they happen, you pay for them. It's great.
Yeah, and speaking of this, I'm gonna give a little bit of a teaser here.
Sure.
Matt and I, in association with the League of Movable Type, have a little project that we hope to bring up soon. That's all we're gonna say right now, but pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah. So we'll keep you posted. Absolutely.
Aside from that, is there anything else you have, Matt?
I think that does it for me. This is going to be our first show back for a little while. It's been a little while since our last show, but I think this is a great one to bring us back. I'm really excited.
And we'd be recording more often. You know, full disclosure here, I'm graduating this quarter. Things have been a little bit busier. You know, for Matt and I both, this is our senior year, and
yeah,
we're both really quickly approaching graduation. So, but we love what we do, and any second we can, we get in here and we talk about what we can. So we do have a show February 5th. Guaranteed. So you will see us again then. Until then, you can always email us at readbetweentheleading@gmail.com.
You can also find us on Twitter @RBTLshow.
And I think that's it. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.